Hey, I just think I might have noticed something. I'm gonna walk over there and check it out. This is Up Up Down Down, the show about the art and craft of video games. I'm Alan Pike. Joining us today is Nigel Brook, a 15-year veteran of the games industry, having worked for Radical Entertainment, later Activision, is now co-founder of Steam Clock Software. Hi, Nigel.
Hello.
This week, we also welcome Justin Voss. By day, Justin is a software engineer for a fruit company, and by night, he co-hosts Low Earth Orbit, a fine podcast that reviews movies, comics, and most importantly, games. Hi, Justin.
Hey there.
How's it going?
Great. How are you?
I'm excellent. So our topic for today is one we've been looking forward to for 16 episodes, stealth games. This is a relatively new genre, but one that's close to my heart, and I know it's also close to Nigel's. We debate about it many times over lunches and at work whenever a new one comes out that we're playing. I just think it's a really interesting genre with some cool challenges and some really interesting gameplay when it's done right. It's also easy to do it wrong. So I think a good way to start things off and kind of kick off the discussion and the understanding of this genre is to ask Nigel, how did this all get started? My understanding is that the sort of first big stealth game was the original Thief game, which I've never played. So what was the deal with that?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's the original. It certainly was my introduction to the genre, and so I sort of think of it as the starting point. I don't know if there's any before that, and maybe there is. Maybe we'll get some angry emails about that. But yeah, it was definitely my introduction to the genre. It was the first game that that sort of tried that gameplay style of killing people is not your primary objective, and sometimes is even harder than successfully completing your mission without killing people. So you're spending a lot of time lurking around in the shadows. Thief introduced a stealth mechanism, which is still pretty well represented in the genre, both in the other Thief games and in other games of that nature, which is the notion of the like light indicator, that you've got some on-screen indication of sort of how in shadow you are. And when you're in shadow, basically the bad guys can't see you. You've got, you're stealthy enough, you're dressed darkly enough that you can just kind of blend into the shadows. Thief was also a really interesting game from story and the way the plot was approached standpoint, that it had, had a lot of atmosphere. It didn't necessarily hand you everything on a platter. It used a lot of cutscenes, but you couldn't do in-engine cutscenes at the time. You couldn't even really do very good video at the time, but the first Thief, I believe, had actually static image cutscenes, so narration over basically hand-drawn pieces of art, if I'm remembering correctly. That I could have the details of that wrong in some way. But yeah, you play this guy, Garrett, who's a master thief who gets sort of sucked into various political intrigue in the city, which is the city that Garrett's in. And you know, there's these different factions and you're sort of bouncing around, and initially he's a bit of doesn't care for anyone, but he sort of gets sucked into having to work with certain factions. And yeah, it's just an all-around great game. It really brought something very new to the genre. Up until that time, there weren't even a lot of first-person games. The first-person genre in general was pretty young at that point, but all of them were basically primarily concerned with shooting stuff or hitting stuff with a sword, whereas Thief was very much not like that. You spent most of your time sneaking around, not killing anyone. Even the sort of equivalent of killing, which is blackjacking them, knocking them out, you don't need to do that much. You can complete, I believe, all the levels in all of the Thief games without ever having to take anyone out, though it takes a pretty dedicated player to actually do that. And yeah, it was just the first time I played it, for me, it was just a real breath of fresh air. I'm not someone who's opposed to violent video games. I certainly don't, they don't bother me, but there's something about a style of game that's totally different, that brings something that unique to the table, but still has that same sort of tension to it, was really interesting. And so, yeah, I kind of fell in love with stealth games with Thief, and they've been one of my key gaming genres that I keep going back to over the years, that I try out the vast majority of stealth games that come out. I really like even games that aren't necessarily stealth games, but that have sort of a stealth focus. You know, we've talked about Assassin's Creed a lot, which is a game that I'd certainly put in that genre. It's not really a stealth game, though it's been getting to be more of a stealth game as it's iterated. But one of the things that attracted me to it was that it was in that style. Like, it had sort of the trappings of a stealth game, and I just really like that genre and enjoy playing it.
Assassin's Creed actually frustrates me in that way, because I like the stealth games, and I enjoy them and have fun sneaking around and not getting noticed or whatever. But Assassin's Creed is not designed, like the levels in particular, but also sort of the way that you get around the world, is not designed in such a way that it's actually normally plausible to just not get detected through a level. They don't make that sort of a requirement when they're designing a level. So you'll often spend a whole bunch of effort kind of going around trying to not get noticed, and you'll get like 75% of the way, and then you get to an area where it's just kind of inevitable and you haven't been practicing killing anyone or fighting, and then you kind of suck at it. And I feel like the stealth is a gameplay mechanic that's, you know, it's interesting to sort of mix it in, but it really works when you kind of go all the way and you say, okay, this is a game where you can get through the entire game without a single person noticing you ever. Which is, other than maybe bosses, but which I think is a kind of interesting distinction.
And there is definitely something there about stealth games that's sort of the thing that's the most frustrating about it, is if you're trying to play them in a stealthy way, you fail very hard. Like, it tends to be one of those, like, oh, that guy spotted me, restart from the last save, right? And it's unlike combat in that respect, that usually, even if things are going badly in a combat scenario, you'll keep playing because sometimes you can sort of pull it out, you know, like you can get lucky. But usually in stealth games, once you're made, that's kind of the end of it. Like, it's, if you're a style of player that likes those games, you're not gonna want to keep playing in the combat style, even if that's available to you. And oftentimes the combat is bad. Like, that's one of the things certainly with Thief that's true, is like, getting in fights just isn't any fun. The sword play is kind of hard to carry off effectively, and you just don't want to be doing it. Like, you can keep going. I don't think any of the missions in at least in the original Thief, like, insta fail if you get detected, if you're on the moderate difficulty level. There's some of the harder ones where I think it does, but you don't want to be in a fight. There's just no way that's going to end well, because it's just so clumsy and unpleasant to be in combat.
What's your guys' take on that particular mechanic of the insta-fail? Like, it kind of inherently seems wrong. Like, oh, some guy just sort of noticed me, and then it's just like, you're detected, you fail. But on the other hand, often in these games, like, and that drives me crazy, to be clear, but often it's effectively that way because you're going to get overwhelmed by guards or whatever. And so the game is sort of being helpful by insta-failing you, but also it just is not fun to instantly fail, you know?
Well, it's probably better, like you said, than being mobbed by a bunch of guards who are going to stomp on you, right? You would rather just roll back to the previous checkpoint. And partly depends on how good the checkpoints are. Like, how recently are you going to have to replay 20 minutes, or are you going to have to replay 2 minutes?
Yeah, I don't know. Have either of you guys seen a stealth game where it has a smooth, like, it has autofail with a smooth recovery? Because the ones that I've seen are much more just like, you know, you died and then it's just like press OK to continue and then it's like loading, you know, as opposed to, you could sort of imagine a more Prince of Persia thing where it's like you kind of warp back in time sort of thing. Then that wouldn't be as frustrating, maybe. But I don't know if I've ever seen that.
I don't think I've ever seen that. That mechanic in a stealth game, no. Like, it always seems to be dump you to the load screen and pick a game to load.
Yeah, whereas I sometimes I'll get frustrated, and like, if I get detected, I'll just run forwards and just trigger even more guards just to see what's going on, or die in a blaze of glory or something, because it's more fun than just a screen immediately saying, you suck, some guy noticed you, therefore the game's over.
And there's some games where that works, like Assassin's Creed, definitely when I fail stealth. I mean, there's those few missions like the eavesdropping missions where a stealth failure is an immediate failure, but the vast majority of missions where you're doing like the environmental stealth, like sneaking through the fields of crops and stuff like that, you can fight your way out of it. But Assassin's Creed, you know, it's a big open world game. It's got all the mechanics. All the mechanics are tuned. So the combat is good. Like, you're not going to get in trouble. Whereas smaller, more stealth-focused, specifically stealth-focused games like Thief series and stuff like that, the combat is often just not, you're not strong enough to survive in that. And the combat can be, like I said, kind of frustrating. So in the games like Assassin's Creed, I'll try and keep going and fight my way through it. But in something like Thief, it's, I mean, usually you don't even need to, you know, need to sort of rage quit and reload. Usually you die so quickly that it doesn't matter. Like, you know, two or three strikes from the bad guy's sword and you're down kind of thing.
I think I prefer that. Like the you run away or you try to run away, but they kill you, then the just instant dying. Justin, what stealth games stick out to you in your experience as either being like particularly memorable or a good example of the genre?
I think the only capital S stealth game that I've played was the original Splinter Cell. I played a bunch of that on a friend's Xbox. And that was a lot of fun. I really, you know, that was my first sort of introduction to the genre. And I liked the sneaking around, and it's how it's almost like a puzzle game almost, you know, because the combat's really sort of in the whole stealth genre really de-emphasized, like you said. And so it's more about, okay, this guy's going to be here at this point, and this guy's going to be alone for this many seconds so I can sneak up, or if I flip the switch, I can turn the lights off. And it's more about, you know, constructing like your path through the space, and it's not so much about how quickly can you reload or how quickly can you get this headshot or whatever, because I'm usually actually not very good at that kind of gameplay. So even in games where it's not necessarily a stealth game, like Assassin's Creed or even like Far Cry 3, I much prefer to take the stealth route, because then it becomes much more about planning and about, you know, just observing things before you dive in there. And then if you get stuck, you can just give up and pull out a rocket launcher or something, which is the nice thing about sort of the hybrid games like that.
At Far Cry 3, I found the stealth worked better than Assassin's Creed, even though Far Cry 3 was even more stereotypical. Like, you had a rocket launcher and like you're this guy that was shooting people all over the place. You weren't like necessarily this, you know, hooded assassin, but it's still, for whatever reason, I can't think really off the top of my head what it was about that maybe you could, Nitro hasn't played it yet, but I'm not sure what it was, but something about the stealth in Far Cry 3 felt really doable and fun. I think they had some sort of mechanic. I guess one part of the mechanic was when you were killing or taking over the guard posts, there was alarms, and there was always like a couple things you could trigger that would cause, like, they would have a tiger captive, and you could like loose the tiger, and you would start eating the guards and things like that. So there's like things in the environment for you to trigger, which is always fun.
Almost any of those simulation-y first-person shooters, like you said, I haven't played Far Cry 3, but I played Far Cry 1 and 2, and they were definitely both very much like that. The Deus Ex games are the same sort of thing. There's plenty of shooters that have more of a tactical edge to them, that even if they don't explicitly support a stealth mechanic, there's enough of a simulation there that you can play them in a stealthy way, right? There's some model of how the guards... vision works, and it might, you know, it might not be as sophisticated as something like Thief, where guards like understand, oh, this torch has been put out, something suspicious is going on here, but at least there's, you know, they've got a vision cone, there's somewhere that you can hide from them, there's somewhere that you'll be seen from them, you've got a variety of different tools that you can approach situations with. And so you can sort of make them into a stealth game, even if there isn't explicitly a stealth mechanic. And, you know, because I'm a fan of the stealthy style, I often end up playing those games like that. Like, I tend to be like, get the sniper rifle and hold on to the sniper rifle as long as I can as my main weapon, and, you know, stay at a distance and take some of the guys out, and then figure out like which guys can I take out quietly, and by the time I get around to fighting, you know, half or two thirds of the guys are gone, and then the combat isn't as fast and furious.
Why? So something that I was thinking about when I was prepping for this episode is that I agree. I find that procedure fun, and I will often take that advantage if I can, if the game gives me the tools to, you know, hang back and either use, like, you know, sniping from a distance, or sabotage, or, you know, knocking guys out, or, you know, sleeping gas, or any of those sort of things to avoid conflict. But why is that fun? Like, doesn't that sound like the boring thing to do? Whereas, like, going in and just, like, causing explosions and, you know, beating people up hand to hand, like, doesn't that, like, it sounds like that would be more fun.
I think a lot of it's the puzzle solving of it. You know, like you said, a lot of those games are very puzzle-like. Splinter Cell Hitman is another one that I've played a couple of the Hitman games in the last year or so, and they're very much puzzle-like. Like, it's just full of these little moments of, like, all right, you need to get to this place. What are all the different approaches? You know, the different entrances you can take, the different routes you can take once you're in, the different disguises that you can have. And there's just all these combinations. And once you've figured out what you're doing, it usually doesn't take much skill to execute it. The interesting part is the planning and coming up with that. Like, how am I going to approach this? And, you know, with Hitman, there's the extreme example of a game that we've mentioned a couple times, which is the new iOS version of it, which is explicitly just a puzzle game. Like, there's not even any pretense of it being like a third person action game. You're literally just moving like board game pieces around, but it's essentially the same mechanics as the real Hitman game in many respects.
I think there's also like a Puppet Master aspect to it too, right? Where you're pulling the strings and the opponents don't really know what's going on, and they get confused and they're running around and you're causing all this chaos and they don't even know that you're there. And that's a different kind of satisfaction than running in there and, you know, blowing up the oil barrels or, you know, taking down all the guys with your huge machine guns.
There's definitely something really fun in Arkham Asylum at getting to them. You know, like they don't know where you are, but they know you're somewhere and they know they're in trouble. And you can hear their sort of comments to each other, like, the bat, he's here. But, you know, they kind of get picked off one by one, and, you know, either they maybe see you, but then they can't find you, or they don't see you at all, and the Joker is taunting them. And definitely, I think that's a good way of putting it, is the Puppet Master.
Just like striking fear into the heart of your enemies.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a puzzle, too, like Nigel says. It actually becomes a strategic thing.
There's also an interesting aspect of it. You know, you say, like, oh, it seems like it would be boring, but in many respects, if you're good at that style of gameplay, you can end up with the game being less repetitive because of it, right? The stealth approach, once you get the hang of it, particularly in games, you know, where there's some ability to recover, like the Batman games are great for that in the stealth situations, you can often get back into stealth mode once you've been broken out of it, which is, it's fairly unusual in that respect. Assassin's Creed is kind of like that too, in that you can usually take out guys locally and then continue stealthing into the next section. But if you can recover from that and get back into it, you can actually be much more successful with that approach than with running in guns blazing. You know, that running in guns blazing sort of seems to move you faster, but how often you fail and die and have to replay the same little section quickly again, I think in some cases probably adds up to more time than sort of taking your time and doing it slowly, because you just don't die as much, or because once you've figured out the route to take, you can re-execute it again with a high degree of precision, right? If you know, okay, I can take this guy out quietly, and then I can take this guy out quietly, and then here's the risky spot where maybe I'll get spotted because I got spotted last time. How can I get around that? Whereas when you just run in there guns blazing, every fight that you get into, you're kind of putting yourself back at risk again, right? That you can, you know, you can just fail because your reflexes aren't quick enough. Whereas in stealth mode, you've got it all planned out. You know what you're going to execute. Usually those tools are set up such that once you know how to execute them, it's easier to execute it than just straight up fighting. And so, yeah, you don't have to replay the same sections as many times just to get them right.
Unless you're trying to do a full run through of no one notices you for the entire game and you're like 3/4 of the way through the level and someone notices you and you're like, now I have to load for my save. That's actually something that I find really frustrating. Even now, like almost every stealth game after whatever, 15 years that the genre's existed, you have this achievement and this mode and often like in-game consequences towards never killing anyone or never getting noticed. But the very first time you kill someone or get noticed, the game doesn't necessarily call that out. So you might be like, okay, I'm going to spend like 4 times as long playing this game in order to never get noticed. But you don't realize when you get to the end that like some bystander across the street down over in the pharmacy in a third story window noticed you for 1/4 second when you were, off going into some alley. And so then it discounted your ability to, get that sort of run through of the entire game as never being noticed. So 99% of the time when I play a stealth game, I try to get that. And then at the end, it's like, oh, yep, you didn't get it. I'm like, well, how close was I? When was I noticed? Like, it's kind of frustrating.
I just take the opposite approach of I never even bother going for that achievement. Like, I just find it's not worth it. I also like having the freedom to play in character and get a little thuggish sometimes. Like, I find that sort of satisfying if you approach it with like, okay, I'm just going to be this like, shadow in the night and they're not going to see me there. But then when they piss me off, like, they mess with the bull, they're going to get the horns. I had a really fun isn't quite the right word, but a really interesting experience with that with Hitman Absolution, which I was playing very much in like a extremely stealthy style. And then there's a point where like the bad guys break into this like nunnery, I think it basically is, where where these nuns have been like helping the hitman out, and the little girl that he's rescued is like staying with them or something like that, and the bad guys come in and are like killing the nuns, and it's like, all right, gloves are going off. Like, I'm not stealthing through this section. Like, I'm just going to be shooting these guys in the head. And it felt like a reasonable time to do that sort of in character. Like, it sort of gave me a little like role playing moment to be able to start killing people. And I find that most stealth games have some moments like that where the story makes me want to kill someone even when I don't have to.
I was going to say, and it just helps break up the pacing, right? It helps break up the gameplay, so it's not so repetitive all the time. In the same way that like an action game can sometimes have the little stealth bits, the stealth game has a little bit of action bits to sort of make things interesting.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things I think is really interesting but hard about the general issue of stealth in games is giving you multiple paths to solve the problem. Because if it is a puzzle, and the puzzle is, oh, okay, you have to shoot this barrel and then make this guy walk over towards the alarm, but then knock over this other thing, but be behind this particular crate at this exact moment, and then use the sleep grenade. Like, then it's sort of, it ends up just being a bunch of trial and error. And then eventually you figure out which one that the level designers had in mind, and then you just kind of execute it. That makes me, like, I'm not entirely sure that this is the case, but it makes me think that the level design for a stealth game is, like, way more time-consuming than just, like, sort of an action game of, like, okay, put these guys here, and then you, like, blow them up or kill them or whatever, you know?
Stealth games tend to kind of be simulation games, right? That a lot of them focus on not so much, here's the path you're going to follow, here's the events that you're going to experience, but setting up like, all right, what are the basic rules of this world, and give you a couple of tools and not even necessarily trying to lock you into a particular path. You know, there's lots of moments in the Thief series that I'm sure, you know, everyone played them differently because the guard paths were just slightly different, and they turned off slightly different torches at different times and took guards out in different places, and then had to, you know, had to compensate and stuff like that. That, you know, it tends to be that, like, set up a set of rules rather than set up a set of experiences that you're going to have. Now, there are stealth games that are more like that. I mean, we mentioned both Splinter Cell and Hitman, which I would say definitely fall into more the category of, you know, kind of the string of pearls, right? That you don't have freedom to go wherever you want and do whatever you want. You've got little bits of freedom and then linear moments between them to kind of tie them together. And there are some very clear, puzzly kind of moments where there's only a couple of right ways to do things. But I would say that's way less common in stealth games than it is in first-person shooters. Like, even the most linear stealth games are games like Hitman or Splinter Cell, where you've still got a lot of freedom compared to a Call of Duty or something like that.
It must be so hard to figure out if you're doing a good job designing the level, right? Do you just play test it to death and just make sure that lots of different people are still able to complete the level? Or because it seems like they almost have to have a golden path in mind sometimes just to prove to themselves that it's beatable at all, right? Or could you just, you know, well, there's 100 guards and they're all looking right at you and it spotlights and, right? I mean, it could get to the point where it's too hard. So, like, finding that balance, I think, would be hard as a designer.
I think generally with games where they are more simulation-y, it's kind of a boiled ocean problem with playtesting it over and over and over again, in that you're never going to have every single person will always have a good experience with every level, unfortunately, which is the kind of lame thing about simulation type games. But you will find, compared to most any other kind of software, that games have way more stuff that gets made and then thrown away. Because you make this level, okay, yeah, it's going to be really cool. You're going to be like hiding in the hay in this, you know, wagon, and you're going to jump out at the right time, and then it turns out, just based on the mechanics and the sort of general feel of the level, and that whole thing just ends up not being fun for like 75% of people, and there's nothing you can really do about it. And you could like play test it 4 or 5 times and spend like months working on it, and then it's like, you know what, let's just cut the whole hay thing, which is part of why games cost hundreds of millions of dollars nowadays. One thing that I think that obviously games in general do this, but in particular stealth games try and do this more, is push you down specific linear paths. So something like Far Cry is just like, okay, yeah, you wander around and you can kind of try to take over this outpost however you want. But have you played Dishonored, Justin? I know Nigel's played it.
No, I haven't.
It's definitely worth playing if you're interested in the genre, which is one thing that they do is they tend to have, like, for any given area, you have to get from this area to the next area, and there's like kind of 3 ways that you could do it. You could just like fight your way through, which was the boring way, and then there'd be like a, okay, use your such and such power to get up to this area to get over here, and then like the kind of like long and winding way, and then there'd be like some clever like, oh, okay, well, if you wait till this guard is going by, and then you just like take out this guard, and then you go up over there and you take out that guard. And so they would kind of plan 3 paths, and each one of those paths would more or less just be linear. But you would kind of pretty quickly get the sense it would be like, you know, a guard would walk by and be like, man, I really sure hope and no one goes through the top story window. Yeah, that would suck, wouldn't it? You know, and then you just, so you know that that is an option, but you don't necessarily have to do it. Which I thought was an interesting balance in between trying to tell a specific story and give like a golden path. But, you know, there were 3 of them.
I feel like the original Deus Ex did a pretty good job with that too. Like, there would be the guns blazing path, but then there would actually be a couple of different paths you could take that were maybe a little more stealthy, depending on how you wanted to play the game. Like, there were parts where you could hack the security cameras, or you could, you know, read through all of the random looking stuff on the desk, and you could find this access code for this door that would just happen to take you where you want to go. Or there's a couple different ways that you could get through, depending on exactly how you like to sort of explore the level.
Yeah, Deus Ex Human Revolution did that as well. And I think I felt like, at least for Human Revolution, they had enough of those that it didn't feel like it was like, okay, do you want path A or path B? It was like, okay, well, there's obviously enough different paths to solving this that I don't even know what they all are. And sometimes I would look up how to do level and it would be like, yeah, well, if you happen to have already done this over here or you happen to have this weapon, then you can try this, but it's pretty hard. Like there would be quite a few different ways of doing it, which is awesome.
When they're done well, they can also set it up in a way that you can jump around to some degree between the paths on the fly, like that you can sort of see, all right, there's a way that I could approach this of going pure stealth, not killing anyone, but there's enough overlap in terms of the path that you have to follow with the, you know, take guys out quietly, that if you hit a point where it's like, oh, this, you know, I keep trying to stealth this portion and I keep getting caught, I'm just going to take these two guys out. And you can sort of make that choice on the fly. And that makes it seem less linear when you do that, you know, there's really kind of the couple of paths that they've built, but you can mix and match between them on the fly to create your own route through it that's tuned to your particular set of skills that you've picked. If it's like an RPG like Deus Ex where you can pick different skills, or just your general level of skill, or like which achievements you're going for, or stuff like that. That's definitely something that's gotten worse about stealth games recently. Like the Thief and Thief 2 were way less like that than modern stealth games are. Like they definitely were way more, you know, here's a building, and as much, you know, to whatever degree it's possible, we've put doors in reasonable places on this building, and we've, you know, set up whatever security systems there are in logical places and go nuts. And to a certain degree, stealth games, I think, have been hurt by, you know, how big and how detailed modern games are getting, that it's harder to build stuff on that scale anymore. There's no levels in the latest Thief that are anywhere near on the scale of some of the ones that they had in Thief 1 and Thief 2. And it's, you know, it's because the levels are so much more expensive to build, because there's so much more detail crammed into them. When, you know, when you just have like, oh yeah, someone can just slap down like 15 polygons here and you've got, you know, a wall and a door, you can build something that's a lot bigger than if it's like, all right, it's going to take an artist like a whole day just to model this one wall because it's so complicated and has so much stuff and all different texture maps and stuff like that. And I think that's, you know, that's hurt stealth games to some degree, because it has reduced freedom as we've moved forward in the genre.
Well, it's especially bad for stealth games because you have the risk of, or you will certainly create content that the player will never see. If you spend, you know, $1 million on this like area in a battlefield game where it's basically just like a twisty tunnel, then like, you know, a nice looking twisty tunnel that looks like it's in a field and going through all these various buildings, but it's really actually a tunnel, then they will definitely see that. Whereas it's easy in a stealth game to never even see the entire attic that they made that has some cool stuff in it, but you just never go up there because you don't need to, because you solve the problem in a different way. So,
or another thing that can happen with that is you can get dead-ended. Like that happened to me actually in one of the bigger, more complicated levels in Thief, which when you're breaking into the main guy's manor house near the end, is there's, it seems kind of linear. Like it's like when I was doing it, I'm like, oh well, yeah, okay, well I've got to go this way and I got to do this stuff. And so this is obviously like the one path I'm supposed to take to get in here. And then I get inside and the interior is very complicated. And so I head, like, it looks like I can't probably get through on the first floor. It's too heavily guarded. So I like head up and I end up like stealthing through this area and past these guards. And I get to another entrance that I could have used in the attic. And it's like, oh, okay, I just spent like 10 minutes getting past all these guards that all it did was lead me to another route that I could have used in. And I got to backtrack past all of them to get to the main area.
Because you're actually going backwards.
Yeah.
That's the worst. When you sort of, you're trying to sort of read the level designer's mind, you're trying to figure out, well, what clue did I miss? Like, was I supposed to go through this other door? Like, it's not obvious what direction you're supposed to be heading to make forward progress. That could be really frustrating.
And it's especially hurt in stealth games where level designers often use something. For example, they'll use a light. Like, go towards the light generally means you're going to move forward. But in a stealth game, you might be wanting to hide in the shadows, so you're going to do the opposite. So I want to, I'll do a sponsor, and then I want to talk about realism and the trade-off in between that and the entire mechanic that we enjoy in these games. So this episode is again brought to you by Steam Clock Software. Steam Clock makes wonderful apps for iOS, Android, and the web. As you probably know, if you're plugged into the mobile world in any way, over the last week, or specifically last week at WWDC, there was an incredible number of new things announced for iOS and the Mac, incredible new opportunities, as well as obligations for people who have apps to keep them on the cutting edge and up to date for the latest operating system. So if you have any app projects in mind or currently on the go, Fortune 500 startup or somewhere in between, and you're looking for a team that sweats every pixel, you can learn more at www.steamclock.com. So realism, everybody's favorite. It's easy for us to complain that something is unrealistic, but it turns out realism isn't as fun as games. Otherwise, we would just be walking around the streets in real life. So there's a lot of little sub elements of this, but just one example is generally in stealth games, there's guards. And generally, if the guards notice you, they will say, hey, I just think I might have noticed something. I'm going to walk over there and check it out. And then if they never come back, then their partner guard just never notices that they're gone. Because that's what you kind of need for the puzzle. So is that like an inherent, like our puzzle or our stealth games always going to kind of be dumbly unrealistic that way? Or have there been any improvements made over time? Is that something that they're sort of starting to shake out?
Maybe that guard just has terrible coworkers that don't care about
him. whatever, that guy was annoying anyway.
I think the particular thing about not noticing that other guards have left their post is it's probably inherent to the genre. Like, certainly you can, you know, it's not like people just aren't smart enough to program AI that does that. The AI in Thief, like I said, is actually good about noticing other changes in the environment, right? That if you put a torch out, like a guard will notice that's out and be suspicious of that and look around and then relight the torch. But the thing about the torches is that they're, you know, they're sort of static elements in the world, right? They've got these two states of like it's on or it's off. And when it's on, it's a, you know, it's an enemy of you because it's light and you're always trying to stick to the dark. But the guards are dynamic, right? They're moving around. They're in different locations. Their patrol paths overlap in different ways. And so if every time you take one of those out, it permanently disrupts the patrol paths in some way, it just makes it harder for the player, makes it harder for the developer to tune. And I think that's kind of the fundamental reason behind that particular piece of unrealism, is that you just can't afford, from the point of view of making the puzzle solvable, to let that change the game. Now, that's not to say that there's no solution to it ever, like that there, you know, that someone couldn't come up with some, like, all right, here's a specific rule we're going to come up for with, for how the guards are going to react to this stuff. But I think fundamentally there's something to be said in stealth games for letting things settle back down and go back to whatever the initial patrol pattern for the guards that was set up is, so that if you make a minor disruption but manage to escape, things will settle back down and then you can sort of try the puzzle again. But yeah, I don't know. I certainly can't think of any case where I've encountered a game that did, like, that even noticed that guys were missing in search. But that's something you probably could do, the same way that usually they'll notice dead bodies, right? Like if you take someone out and the body's lying there, you're, like, they're going to notice and they're going to search around. It seems like you probably could, you know, there'd be some way to have the same approach to guy's missing from the post, that it's a cause for some alarm, and then you've got some timed searching mechanism. But I haven't seen any games do that, and that suggests to me that there's something about the, you know, the specific mechanics of design there that I'm just not familiar with, not having worked on one of those games, where there's some reason why that doesn't work from a gameplay standpoint.
I guess Arkham Asylum does that a little bit. Like, when you're starting to run out of enemies, then Joker will start taunting them and telling them.
And I wonder how much of it, too, is about keeping the player in control, right? Because if the guards are predictably dumb, then that predictability makes it easier for you as the player to be able to control the situation, kind of the same puppet master thing we were talking about, where you want to be able to be the one in charge of the situation, and you want to be able to be the one pulling the strings, and you kind of need the guards to be predictable in that way, the same way that, like, the torches are predictable, so that you can be the one managing how all this is going down.
Yeah, it's sort of like the somewhat unrealistic, well, actually really unrealistic thing of most stealth games is actually their third-person camera, or I believe in Far Cry, it's a first-person camera, but when you're undercover, then it goes into a third-person camera. And in that circumstance, you can see around the box that you're hiding behind. You can see around the corner that your character's not actually looking around, but you as a player can see around it. And that's just needed for, like, it to be a game. Otherwise, it's just like, well, I'm staring at a wall, and then there's some guys around the corner, and I don't know what they're doing. So unless you give them magic powers that they can see through the wall, or some sort of, you know, goggles or something that you can see what's going on, then you basically just need to cheat and make it unrealistic that, you know what, James Bond is awesome enough that he knows where the guards are by, I don't know, some reason. And that's why, as a player, I can make decisions based on that information.
Yeah, Deus Ex did the same thing of going to third-person camera when you were in cover, if I remember correctly. Not the original Deus Ex, like Human Revolution.
The Last of Us had that interesting mechanic where you could sort of go into your super hearing mode and you could sort of see the zombies based on how they were making noise as they shuffled around and stuff, which is interesting. But that game's also third-person, so you can still use the camera to sort of look around corners that would be impossible to look around.
I liked that mode, and I guess that's something that's happened more and more. I joke that there's like goggles you can see through walls, but that's actually, like, I believe Dishonored had a version of that, and yeah, Batman's had a version of that, and Last of Us has had a version of that. BioShock did not, but that's the kind of thing where, like, a lot of modern games are getting that because it actually turns out to be fun. So if you can figure out a way for your character to have that, whether it's just because they're such a good hearing or whatever, that's actually good.
The new Thief has that as well. It's got a reveal mode. I think it's particularly important for the first person games. Like, you know, that if you've got something that's naturally third person or that goes into a third person camera, like, you can sort of get some of that. But if it's strictly first person, like Dishonored or Thief is, and you've got no way to figure that stuff out, it can be a pain. The original Thief games didn't do that, but they did a lot more with sound, like that it was very clear where people were because their sound, like, really sort of abnormally loud footsteps, and guards would talk to themselves a lot and stuff like that. And so that was the way of trying to give you sort of those same clues. But yeah, that seems to have fallen out of favor in favor of the, like, press this button to see through walls mode.
Well, like, even if something like Assassin's Creed, which is not a stealth game, even though it is stealthy, nowadays when you're walking or you're trying to sneak around somewhere and a guard is, like, starting to notice you and they're, like, behind you in a window, like, 100 yards above, then a thing appears on your screen with, like, a progress graph of how much they're noticing you and noise to indicate whether or not they're a sniper. Like, that's, when you think about it, that's pretty ridiculous. Like, yeah, okay, this assassin's pretty tuned into the world, but I don't think he can feel the difference between a sniper looking at him from behind and a normal guard.
I think the military would love to get some of those gadgets that let you know when someone is looking at you. That would be awesome.
That would be highly popular.
Yeah, I think that's another one of those things where there's sort of mechanics reasons why it's gotten harder to do it in a more legit way. Like I said, the original Thief, as far as I remember, didn't do any of that stuff. Like, all you had to go off for guards alert levels was what they were saying. And they did a pretty good job of telegraphing things with that. Like, they had like a half dozen or dozen little exclamations that they'd make if they, thought they'd spotted something. And if you stayed in the shadows at that point, then they'd, grumble and move on. And if they were fully alert, they'd have other stuff that they'd yell. And just as the games have gotten more complicated, it's gotten harder and harder to effectively do that. And so, yeah, you get these sort of artificial mechanics. Like, in something like Assassin's Creed, the option isn't really do the artificial thing or do something better. It's do the artificial thing or just don't have that be a gameplay element, because there's probably no good natural way to let you know, oh, yeah, there's some guy up on the wall that you can only barely see if you look up at just the right angle that's drawing a bead on you. Like, there's just... there's no easy way to give you that clue. Whereas the world of like the original Thief was much, much simpler, simpler world layout, not dozens of pedestrians wandering around interfering with your vision, not super vertical. And, games have just gotten more complicated. And as they've gotten more complicated, certain things that worked in the past have kind of stopped working.
Either you guys, played the old GameCube game Eternal Darkness?
No, I haven't.
This is like a sort of cult classic, I guess, where...
I think you've even heard of it.
It's a survival horror game, which is not really my genre, but it's interesting from the perspective that you go crazy over time depending on the enemy seeing you. Or is that my... I actually have only... like, I played it very briefly, but mostly like watching my brother playing it. But like... if the monsters or whatever see you or you're around them, then you will start to go crazy and then the world will start to deteriorate or your perception of it. So things can happen like a spider crawls across the surface of the TV. So it looks like, it scares you. And, the world starts to kind of like become a little bit acid trippy. Or one of the thing I think I liked the most was in some combat situation or whatever, or like a tense situation, monsters really nearby, it would flick to this sort of like holding pattern, like the blue like input 2 or whatever, which at the time was what TVs would normally do if you were not on the correct channel to be, using the game system. And so it would totally like break the third wall on that kind of stuff.
It's the fourth wall.
It is the fourth wall. It would break the fourth wall. It would break all four walls. Which I thought was like kind of an interesting mechanic as far as like breaking realism as far as sort of stealth and trying to get not noticed, which was interesting to me.
That's really cool. I think there's a spot in one of the Metal Gear games. I haven't played any of them, but I think there's a certain like boss character in Metal Gear Solid that does the same sort of thing where it sort of tries to trick you into thinking that maybe your PlayStation's come unhooked from the TV, but actually it's the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's one of them. I've played a little bit of the Metal Gear Solid games, but I've never like sat down and played all the way through one of them. But I've read stuff about them, and there's definitely one of them where I think you have to like use the second controller to beat the guy or something, and like it's definitely that game series does some of those like weird meta fourth wall breaking sort of things.
Well, there's this one fight against this really old guy where one of the strategies to kill him is to just like save and then come back a couple days later and he'll have died of old age.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I mean, it's not the only way to kill him, awesome. But it's the one way that you can do it.
Just outlive him.
Yeah, just outlive the bad guy.
I thought you were going to say like smother
him with
the pillow.
And that's one of the things that actually I think kind of bugs me about the Metal Gear Solid series is, at least the ones that I played, there always seems to be those moments of like them not entirely taking themselves seriously in a way that I found kind of grating. Like just the thing with like, I mean, there's some of those moments that are literally like Snake is hiding in a cardboard box with like eye holes cut out and can move around. And as long as the guys aren't looking straight at him, they won't notice. Like literally they can turn away and you can like pick up the cardboard box and walk along behind them. And you know, set it down, and they'll turn around and be like, huh, all right, I guess that cardboard box was closer than I thought it was before. I just keep walking. And that, like...
It's like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. It needs a little, like, when he's walking.
It's exactly what I was going to say. The Looney Tunes school of stealth.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but it I don't know, it just always struck... It struck me as odd in Metal Gear Solid 2, which was sort of the one I played the most of that series, that, I don't know, it just seemed... It seemed weird. Like, it seemed kind of grating.
The Metal Gear series actually had my worst punishment for playing a stealth game non-stealthily, where I think it was Metal Gear Solid 3. It was before I was really into the stealth genre, where I was playing kind of indiscriminately and killing a lot of the guards and things like that and not really being that stealthy. And then I got to this one section where you're walking down a river. I'm not sure if either of you got to this part in this game. I think it was most of the way through it, where you walk past and they're like shambling, kind of zombie-esque versions of every single person you've killed so far in the game.
Whoa.
Which for me was like hundreds of people. So it took so long that I was like, I thought they were just repeating. And so I couldn't figure out. And like, actually, it turns out that you can pass that by killing yourself somehow. I don't know if it was like using a bomb or a grenade or something, but like, there's some way that you can get out of it by committing suicide or something like that. But I ended up just like sitting through it for like an hour at least. It was just ridiculous. So again, another good example of that series playing with weird conventions and torturing you in strange ways. And also encouraging you to like, hey, maybe you should have been a little more stealthy, idiot.
It's weird because from the outside, the whole series seems like it takes itself really seriously. Like if you only watched like the trailers or looked at the screenshots, you'd think it was a pretty serious game. I haven't played any of them and I kind of would have thought that too. But then you hear stories like this kind of stuff and you're like, actually, this sounds kind of goofy.
Yeah. And it's a weird like cognitive dissonance kind of thing. I think that's one of the things that doesn't appeal to me, that if it was either goofier, like if it was something like No One Lives Forever that we mentioned last episode or maybe the episode before, where it really doesn't take itself seriously. You know, it's a stealthy first person shooter, but it's one that is just kind of ridiculous and over the top. That's fine. Or if it's a game that takes itself like way too seriously and is really like grim and broody and stuff like that. Like that's fine too. But there's something about Metal Gear Solid with the way it mixes those that doesn't work for me.
It sort of feels like they kind of owe it to you to signal to you before you start playing the game kind of what you're getting yourself into a little bit, right? Like somehow to indicate that this is going to be goofy and then maybe it wouldn't be so grating.
But the thing that is grating about it is not that, to me, with Metal Gear, is not that it's goofy, but that it ventures off into like really ridiculous plot lines, but that they do take seriously. Not like ridiculous like cardboard boxes, but just like over the top, bizarre suit, like non, like fantastical. I can't even describe
like borderline it. Borderline sci-fi kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, it is kind of sci-fi, but not, it's weird. It's just like, it's like a fever dream-ish kind of, but it's not trying to be funny at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the series fits together in weird ways, and it's like, you know, every game, you never really know what time period it's taking in, and like a whole bunch of the people are all clones of each other, and sometimes they don't even tell you who you're actually playing until most of the way through the game. It's like, oh yeah, you thought you were playing Solid Snake, but actually it turns out this guy's big boss. Sorry, we didn't tell you that earlier. Like,
yeah. But, and if you've played the whole series and you take it all seriously and remember all the characters, they'll put a whole bunch of effort into this big reveal that like, so-and-so was actually so-and-so. But if you're coming into the series partway through, or if you've only played parts of the games, instead you're like, who?
Yeah. And they just have some of the dumbest names in the world. Like, seriously, Revolver Ocelot? Like, really?
I actually, there's a sequence where I was playing Metal Gear Solid 3 or 4 or whatever, where Revolver Ocelot comes along, and he's featured in other games that are supposed to happen in the future or whatever, but he's being annoying, and so he's kind of off in the distance. I pulled out my sniper rifle fast enough, and I managed to shoot him in the head, and then it said, like, you failed, time paradox. And I was like, oh, I couldn't, like, remove him from the future games.
Someone took the time to write that. Like, yeah. Someone took the time to sit down and program the game so it would tell you that. That's awesome.
I really appreciated that, actually, because what like a lot of games would do is just make him invincible.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be the crappy thing to do. So thanks for listening. You can check the show notes, subscribe, or give us feedback at upup.fm. And see you next week. So, I have not been fully up to date in watching every single tweet and reading all the articles on E3, which is this week, but my understanding is that there are as many games announced or shown at E3 for the new generation of consoles as there were like already released. Like, it's just a complete buttload of games.
There's a pretty good crop of them this year, definitely. Like, there's some stuff that looks really interesting.
I haven't been following it very closely, but I heard that this year versus last year, that Sony and Microsoft basically traded press conferences. I guess last year, like, Sony had the awesome rah-rah, we love you press conference, and Microsoft kind of had the, yeah, we're going to make you buy this thing that you don't really want to buy kind of press conference. And I heard that this year that it was maybe like they swapped roles, but I don't really know what that means because I didn't follow the conferences.
Yeah, I didn't watch either of the actual keynotes. Like, I never bother sitting through those. I always just want to see the actual trailers. So I don't know how the two press conferences came off, but certainly there's a pretty good suite of games on tap for both of them. And I would say maybe the Xbox lineup is a little stronger, though. I mean, that's some of that just depends on what kinds of games you like. Yeah, there's some interesting stuff there on the stealth front. This is one I don't know that I'd actually try, because it's in that kind of like survival horror genre, which is a part of stealth that just doesn't do it for me for some reason. But that, what is it called? Alien something or other. What's the subtitle? Alien Isolation.
You're making another Alien game?
Yeah. And it's like it's not a like fighting alien game. It's a like, it sounds like there's like one alien that's stalking you the entire game.
No way, I think I've heard about this. Yeah, because like the the old new one, Colonial Marines, was kind of a train wreck, right? And that was very much like run and gun, shoot 'em. But this one is supposed to be more like, so if that one was Aliens, then this one is supposed to be more like Alien, right? Where you have like the little sound meter and like it's all quiet and the thing's like kind of stalking you, right? Is that?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. I saw a little bit of the gameplay in the gameplay trailer, and it seems like it's just like you have no guns. You have like one of the little motion trackers, and just like this thing's on you all the time, and you need to keep it at bay. And that's the whole game is basically that. Which, you know, that sounds kind of interesting. Like I said, I'm not a big survival horror person, but I might make an exception for an alien game.
Sounds pretty cool.
There's a couple Sony-specific pieces of news that I noticed because I'm sort of slightly a PlayStation partisan, although not extreme. And one was that Nigel's excited actually about this as well. Grim Fandango is coming to the PS4, which is a game that I didn't sort of get a chance to play in its first iteration, and it's now outdated enough that I probably would be turned off by the sort of roughness, because it's more than 10 years old. Now,
yeah, and it has really terrible controls. Like,
but I'm interested to kind of play, at least to get a sense of it. Like, I didn't feel like I had to beat Monkey Island, but at least like doing the "Hey, I'm Guybrush," like doing that kind of level of depth to it gave me a sense of when people are talking about it, I get it now. Similarly with sort of like Ico and Shadow of the Colossus and some of these great games, even if they passed me by as far as being able to be amazed by them, I still want to get a sense of them. So I was interested to see that was coming. And then the Uncharted 4, which is sort of of course there's an Uncharted coming out, but I mean, it's Uncharted, so you gotta be excited. And then all the people out there who don't or never did have PS3s or PS2s and don't care about Uncharted are rolling their eyes, but it's one of those things where if you do have a PlayStation, then you kind of have to play Uncharted.
I know, I feel like I'm going to get obligated to, I'm obligated to buy a PlayStation 4 now, I think. I mean, I can at least wait until 2015 when Uncharted 4 comes out. But when that happens, I think I pretty much have to get one now.
Do we know whether or not it's a PS... I guess it would have to be, because it's Naughty Dog, who does Uncharted, is a Sony first-party shop, and they wouldn't... I was going to ask, is it PS4 exclusive? But as opposed to... Like, a lot of the games, like Destiny, which... That's the giant, ridiculous Bungie one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Destiny is this super highly anticipated, like, literally $500 million budget game that they're releasing later this year, but it's coming out on the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One and the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation 4, not because they're like, well, you know, the game isn't really going to be technically, we don't really have any ambitions for it to be more powerful than the PS3 could support, but just because with that amount of budget, they need to make back every sale that they could possibly make back on the game.
Yeah, it's probably just the economics of doing AAA games these days, right? Which is where, in order to sort of spread that risk out, you have to make it for as many platforms as you reasonably can, right?
Yeah, but I don't notice that being... I didn't notice that last time around. Like, I felt like there was like 6 months where there was games coming out for PS2 and PS3 or Xbox and Xbox 360. Whereas this is like, all right, like the PS4 has been out for a while, but there's still... like games that are super highly anticipated, because like the games that were coming out for the PS2 when the PS3 was still out were normally like kind of shovelware,
yeah,
that weren't gonna actually make any use of the PS3 anyway. So it's kind of interesting to me to see, because it's a little disappointing, because obviously any effort they're spending on getting it to work on PS3 has some drag on how good the PS4 version is going to be. Whether it's just resources or just like, oh, let's do this really cool, like rocks are crumbling out onto the street or whatever. And it's like, you know what? Like, that's just not going to work on the PS3, guys.
It's also a little different this time because the releases weren't staggered as much. Like, there were, I don't know about a lot, but there were definitely some like PS2/Xbox 360 games that came out. Just kind of for the practical reasons of, like, the Xbox 360 had been released. The Xbox, the original Xbox, was, was never really a thing. Like, it didn't have any life past when the 360 was announced. So it's like, all right, well, PS3 isn't out yet. Like, we'll do a PS2 Xbox 360 version of the game because... that's what makes sense. So there was some overlap in that sense. But I think by the time the PS3 came out, the PS2 and the Xbox 360 had kind of been the overlap generation. And people were chomping at the bit of like, all right, let's make next-gen games for the 360 and the PS3. And so when the PS3 hit, it was mostly just Xbox 360 PS3 games at that point. Like, I think that's how... that transition went, and why it seemed different this time is both of those were, both of them were overlapping. Both of them, the previous version was successful enough that there was a huge installed base, and so yeah, it just timed out different. But I don't think there's much beyond Destiny that's far back anymore. Like, I don't think any of the other big stuff that was announced was that multi-platform. Like, that was the thing that was sort of interesting for me about this E3, is it's the first one where it feels like, yeah, now we're starting to get next-gen games. Like, if you look at, if you look at the difference between, like, Assassin's Creed Unity and Assassin's Creed 4, I mean, it's, Assassin's Creed 4 shipped on the PS4 and Xbox One along with the PS3 and 360, but it was a PS3 360 game that they just did a little graphical spit and polish on, whereas Unity is a game that could not possibly run on the PS3 and the 360.
What about it makes you say that? I haven't seen the trailer for it at all, so I don't know, but what about Unity makes
it possible? Just the sheer level of detail in the world compared to the previous iterations. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there's just way more going on there graphically, whereas as the PS3 versus PS4 versions of Assassin's Creed 4, there wasn't anything more there. It was just what was there looked a little better. I don't think you could render those scenes at any level of fidelity on the PS3 or 360 that they're getting out of the PS4 and Xbox One for some of those new games. But yeah, like Assassin's Creed Unity, Division was another one that looked really impressive.
That's why we're excited for Uncharted, because the original Uncharted is the game that showed us, like, because we had PS3, I think the original Uncharted came out like a couple of years into the existence of the PS3. But when Uncharted came out, it was like, oh, this is what a PS3 game looks like. And it was sort of a discontinuity. It was like pre-Uncharted and post-Uncharted. And so I expect, I mean, maybe it's unrealistic expectations, but I expect that when the Uncharted 4 comes out for PS4, that this will be the okay, like, because Naughty Dog takes that stuff, like, not just like, oh, they take it seriously and they're good at it, but that's kind of their purpose in life, is to like show this is what this platform can do, so you guys better step your game up, and this is how good it can be. And so it's fun to see, and also they make fun games. It's not just a tech demo. So
yeah, if the game looks anything like the trailer, it's going to be amazing.
I was just clicking through and reading about Destiny, which is this huge budget game by the Halo folks. And I noticed the composers, and one of the composers, there's three of them, the people who normally do Halo, and it lists someone named Paul McCartney. And so I was like, oh, that's funny. There's a composer that goes, his name is Paul McCartney. But no, it's actually, they had enough budget that they hired Paul McCartney from the Beatles to make sci-fi soundtrack for their video game.
I mean, that, like, that project seems almost too big. Like, it's kind of either got to be a success like nothing the industry has ever seen before, or it's going to be a colossal failure.
Well, if it sells, like, if it's only one of the best-selling games of all time, if it's just like, yeah, it's like top 10, then it's going to lose money, which is hilarious. And it's possible that it's just like a Waterworld kind of thing where they spend 10 times as much money as they make from it. I doubt that that's the case. I think, like, normally, like, a AAA game is sort of guaranteed to get like 85% on, or like something with that high of a budget is guaranteed to get like 85% on Metacritic and to, you know, make its way into like greatest hits and be pushed by all the sort of various venues that push it to the degree. It's not quite like going to the movie theater where people are just like, yeah, I'm not going to go this week. And then just no one sees it. And then the studio goes bankrupt, you know?
Well, but it's a multiplayer game, you know, it's something that you can't just sort of pick up and play and enjoy later if it doesn't catch on, right? Like,
that's true.
Something like Bioshock Infinite. Like, Bioshock Infinite, I thought it was a pretty good game, but it didn't sell as well as they wanted to. And, you know, studio got downsized basically as a result of how the sales didn't meet expectations. But, like, fundamentally, you can go into the store and get a copy of Bioshock Infinite and have whatever level of fun you're going to have out of it in spite of the fact that it wasn't successful. Whereas something that's a multiplayer game, if it's not successful, like, a year from now, you won't be able to go and get a copy and have fun with it because there won't be anything there anymore.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. I hadn't realized this, but I was looking on the list of biggest box office bombs of all time, and I think of things like, I mentioned Waterworld before, but apparently, I guess partially inflation, but I don't know, maybe just studios sucking at life. A lot of them are like from the recent years. Like, the top five, three of the top five were from last year. 47 Ronin, The Lone Ranger, and RIPD all lost just like lost well over $100 million each, which is pretty awesome. Awesomely horrible, but yeah, so very excited for all the various reasons to justify the PS4 that I'm going to buy anyway, but at least then I'll feel good about my my allegiance.
Speaking of late-breaking successes, you know, we were talking, was that just last episode? Because we've been off, we had a week off there, so maybe it was only last episode, but it might have been the one before. You know, we were talking about Nintendo and their woes. And
the Wii U is doomed.
And since then, Mario Kart 8 came out, and apparently the Wii U's no longer doomed.
And it's moving consoles, which is what they needed.
It outsold, according to VG charts here, which is about the only place I know that you can get even remotely reasonable numbers on this. It outsold the Xbox One by more than 3x.
Does that mean it also outsold the PS?
And almost was ahead of the PS. Like it was within like 10k units of the PS4.
I didn't realize that the PS4 was selling three times as well as Xbox One. That's a bigger margin than I would have expected also.
Yeah, I mean, part of it's that actually this week it previously it had been Europe and Japan had been the problem that that the Xbox One was actually selling better than the PS3 in North America, but then was like way behind in Europe, and the Xbox One hasn't even launched in Japan. I don't know if it'll ever launch in Japan. I mean, the original, like the Xbox 360 was a complete failure in Japan, as far as I know, like Virtual Boy level failure.
Wow.
But it looks like this last week, actually, even in North America, the Xbox One just got it handed to it.
Huh. It'd be interesting to see that. I guess Far Cry 4 is the other one that we haven't mentioned as far as, and then also the new Batman game, Arkham Knight, which I haven't watched the trailer for
yet. Yeah, that looks pretty good. Those ones impressed me. Like I said, The Division looked really interesting.
That's the racing open world-y
one? No, the racing open world one is The Crew, which also looks very interesting. The Division is like a RPG tactical shooter, strong co-op element. Sort of a dystopian future kind of thing going on.
I'll buy it.
it looks pretty interesting. But I think The Crew might be the open world racer that you're. Yeah.
You mentioned enough like push buttons for me too.
Just had to say the phrase dystopian future and your checkbook was already out.
Well,
I say checkbook. That's a thing that people have now. I meant credit card. Sorry.
Dystopian future is actually the one where, like, if I bought every game that was set in a dystopian future, I would go bankrupt fairly quickly, I think. But unless they were all in some giant Steam bundle,